Good morning, everyone, and welcome to I Take Bravo Very Seriously with your host, Dana. We have a very special episode today because I have the very cool and very amazing Kiki Monique joining to discuss Faith Stowers' lawsuit. So as you may have heard, last Friday, Faith Stowers from Vanderpump Rules filed a lawsuit against Bravo, Evolution, and NBC. And I posted the legal documents to my Instagram feed, but a lot of people have questions about what it means and what she's asking for, so I've brought Kiki on to discuss that. Then we're going to get into the recaps. I've got Summer House, Rachel Goes Rogue, Vanderpump Rules, the Vanderpump Rules After Show, and The Valley, so let's get into it with Kiki. I'm very excited to introduce my guest who's here with me to break down Faith Stowers' lawsuit. You may know her from her podcast Pop Crime with Betches or Reality Checked on Radio Andy. It's Kiki Monique, otherwise known as the Talk of Shame on Instagram. Thank you for joining I Take Bravo Very Seriously, Kiki.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
So we've got another one. Yes. Right? And you are sort of the queen of pop crime, right? And so I thought you would definitely be the person I want to speak to when it comes to this lawsuit. But first of all, I actually just thought it was interesting and I'm curious your opinion. I don't feel like people care about this one as much as Rachel's or maybe some of the others. I feel like this kind of died down within like an hour.
Yeah, I think that people, I feel like the Faith Stowers just sort of story is really what kicked off sort of everything that we know about new Vanderpump, right? Because
right.
And now it's been recycled because now we have some of those people who got fired now starring in their own show, which is, you know, I think doing pretty well because yeah. I really enjoy it.
Right.
So I do think that Faith kind of realized that this was the time to strike. I mean, we know she launched a podcast and all of these things, so it was smart. But I also think that people are a bit fatigued just because we've been talking about this particular story for, you know, we're going on 4 years now.
That's true. That's true. That makes sense. Yeah. I guess it's also not against the beloved Ariana, right? I mean, if she was tied into this in some way, which she's not, I think it would sort of be a different story. And it's also against not individual players. And sort of, I was wondering if maybe you could sort of speak to the listeners as to high level, what is this, right? Like, what is she suing for? Who is she suing? What, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's so interesting about this, you know, reality reckoning is, you know, really all of these lawsuits or most of these lawsuits are against either Bravo, the production company, I think Evolution has been tied into a few of them.
Right.
And then the players behind the scenes. But what is so salacious about it is when they go through sort of just the general allegations, they're allowed to tell their stories, which draws in the reality stars. And they tell these wild stories and allegations about the people in these shows. But these civil lawsuits are never really against those particular mm-hmm. people. You know, we hear Lala mentioned in this lawsuit. We hear Brittany Cartwright mentioned this lawsuit. But this is a civil lawsuit that is solely against, you know, Bravo and the production company. And really, it's an employment lawsuit. I mean, a lot. And then most of these lawsuits are. These are people who are saying, you as my employer did X, Y, and Z wrong. And now I want to be compensated because you did those things wrong.
Right. I mean, a lot of times, especially with the Rachel one, you have 19 pages and 15 pages of it is this context, this fluff of like the people we are not suing. And so people always question like, what is this? Why is this there? And it is really supposed to be there for context, but I feel like deep down, I don't know if you can even do this legally. If somebody just wanting to put it out there and file it legally, like for Rachel, for example, she wanted everyone to know what James did to her family's dog. She doesn't want anything to happen to him, but she wants everyone to know about it. And she wants it to be a legal filing that's filed somewhere away. Right. You know?
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
And Rachel's lawsuit is a bit different because she is specifically suing, right. You know, Ariana and Tom
right.
and not, she has not,
right.
at least not yet. She hasn't sued Bravo. But in the case of, you know, Leah McSweeney, you know, you are protected, you know, by what you say in your allegations. I don't know the exact legalese right off the top of my head, but you are protected. However, Andy Cohen's lawyers did come back and basically they said, you know, because you made these allegations and sort of pushed them to the media with the purpose of sort of like getting a rise out of the media, mm-hmm. you lose that protection because they're basically saying like you did this for nefarious reasons.
Right.
And so I'm really curious in that case, you know, and they demanded an apology from Leah and a retraction. So we haven't heard any, you know, anything since then. But, you know, normally, obviously, people are protected because people wouldn't file lawsuits if they couldn't be protected by what they, you know, the allegations they make.
And when you say protected, it also makes me feel like the difference here is that, well, or is it the same with Leah? Is Faith in a protected class, right? Because was Leah not in a protected class or arguing that she was in a protected class with her mental health? And then is Faith not in a protected class because
no,
of her?
No, I mean, that's part of her, you know, that's part of her lawsuit. But as far as just like filing a lawsuit, like you, as anybody who files a claim, you are technically protected okay. by what you put into that lawsuit. You know, obviously, you know, even when we've seen Diddy, right? The Diddy lawsuits are wild. I mean, I haven't even known how to report on them because they're so crazy. I'm like, can I put this on TikTok? Am I going to get banned? but when it, you know, obviously it's going to be some interesting precedent set, especially I'm looking to see like if their lawyers push back on like these claims are so false and they're intended solely to bring attention to the lawsuit and not because they're truthful.
Well, let's get into what she's actually alleging. I feel like this one's more about the fluff and less about the causes of action because the causes of action are more the legalese, and we don't need to get into the nitty-gritty of that because it's not that interesting, but we can get into the allegations and maybe just discuss that. So one of the things that she's arguing is that Lala Kent would routinely joke that she was blacker than Faith, and this was caught on camera. So this, I don't recall ever being on camera, but, you know, this is one thing. There's several things in here that she's alleging are on camera, but this is one I didn't have evidence of. But, you know, it's interesting that she's constantly alleging things that are on camera. So, you know, I think with that evidence coming forward, that's why I just feel like she has better grounds with the things that she's alleging. And then there's this other one where she says that Brittany Cartwright hurled racial slurs at her over speakerphone in the presence of cast members and cameras mocking her quote unquote nappy hair. And again, on camera.
And, you know, and it's allegedly. Like, I understand why she has to like list out those things because, you know, she is saying that there was a hostile work environment. She's saying, you know, there was discrimination, harassment, and that her employers did nothing about it. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, you know, we as viewers have watched these characters for a decade. And, you know, your spidey senses go off about what sounds real and what sounds, you know, not real. You know, in the Lala case, do I believe that she said, I'm blacker than you? Yeah, I do, because I've known people like Lala. I was friends with people like Lala. And they just didn't think there was anything racist or discriminatory about saying something like that. Because, you know, I was friends with mostly white people. I came from a town that was mostly white people. And so they would always say things like, oh, yeah, you know, you're whiter than me, or, you know, I'm blacker than you, because I listen to, you know, rock music or, you know, or metal. So I believe that. Now, do I think Lala is horrified, you know, because obviously now she has evolved? Probably, but, you know, we remember you're Lauren from Utah. Lauren from Utah definitely.
She's coming out lately, though. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
And then what else does she have here? I do have like a quote from Brittany that she did say, I have nothing to do with that. This was a reply to someone's question about it on Instagram. This has since been deleted, but I just want to have it out there that Brittany did respond to that. Then there was a situation that she mentions that she confided to a producer that she had developed feelings for Lala, and that producer seemed to be gleeful about making the dynamic between them very awkward. And so for their cast trip to Hawaii, production had them stay in one room with a single bed and also pressured them to get intimate and touch each other centrally on camera. I don't know if you had a chance to check out my Instagram, but I posted a couple clips from that season and those exact clips of those exact things happening where Faith is saying, oh, I see one bed. I see two people. And Lala's saying, well, I mean, we sleep together all the time. It's fine. And then you have the scene of them in the water where they're taking their bikini tops off in front of all the guys and everybody getting upset, and Faith is sort of hopping her body onto Lala's, you know. So it's interesting what is actually caught on camera and that we've seen. Then there's the knife incident, right? So this is interesting. For those who haven't actually read the lawsuit, which you can read in full, Kiki did a live on that, which was great. Thank you. I love when you read them live. And then I went and found it and paid $16 Canadian, and I have that on my feed if anyone wants to read the actual lawsuit documents, but I've summarized it as well as my feed. But basically, she says that Lala violently assaulted her with a knife on camera. As a Black woman who served in the military, she felt that if she attempted to disarm Lala Kent or otherwise venture to protect herself, she would be stereotyped due to her race and blamed for the events. She was discouraged by the show not to escalate the situation or involve the police, and that her job would depend on it. So I'd never heard that before. There's this podcast called The Bitch Bible. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's now
Yeah.
become the research den for like all things Vanderpump Rules. I
Well, it's
found.
how Stassi and Kristen got fired.
Right. I have found worse things on there. Like James Kennedy
Oh.
stuff. It's wild, but again, for another day. But I'm just going to play this clip really quick. It's a little bit of Stassi and a little bit of Kristen on The Bitch Bible. Two separate episodes, but you get the idea.
Knife
On
out.
faith?
On faith.
For telling that the salad was tossed?
I'm not sure. Maybe that was why. So there was like a, I wasn't there, but there was a knife laying on the bar, and Lala and Faith had got into it years ago. And so Lala like just grabbed the knife, and Faith like went apeshit and then started crying and like ran
Oh.
away. And she was like, you know, I had PTSD from being in the military, and like I could have just like killed you just now by you even lifting that knife up. And like, bitch.
Lala pulled
So,
a
you
knife
know, I
out
mean,
on camera.
it's there, right? Like it
Yeah.
happened. So that's
Yeah.
wild because never heard that before. But it made me think of Potomac, and I think it was Candace pulled a knife on Ashley in her
Oh,
own
yeah.
home on camera, fully on camera, like,
Yeah.
and it was aired. Different. I don't know, right? Like it's they obviously hid this for a reason, and she does go into a whole story afterwards about how Bill Langworthy, the executive producer, called her and said, no, like don't escalate this and that kind of thing. But wow.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, look, it's like reality TV used to be the Wild West. We used to be able to kind of get away with anything, and we, the viewers, like lapped it up. And if you were in that moment, you probably accepted it too. But then, you know, I think there's two things that happen. You kind of go on with your life and see the people that sort of perpetrated these things being very successful, and you aren't
Right.
successful, so you start gaining a little bit angry, as you rightfully should. Especially, the knife incident, obviously crazy. But I think what's worse is how the production sort of used her as she, or allegedly used her for a storyline, brought her back into the fold, but weren't paying her. And so I think that, like, it's when we get into those sorts of things, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm perked up, because for the reality reckoning, it's these moments of crazy and drinking and stuff like that that people are trying to like throw in. I'm like, guys, this is reality TV, and also you're adults. Like, you know, which I do believe that level of, you know what you're signing
I
up
always have
for.
to remind myself of that, you
But
know.
when it comes to the things like being taken advantage of and, you know, not getting paid for your work, that is where I say absolutely that, like, these production companies and these networks need to be held accountable.
Totally. But, and I don't know this, and maybe you have some more information on this. My understanding with Vanderpump Rules is you don't get paid. Okay, so like people like Max Boyens, Dana Kathan, who were actual cast members on season 8, both got paid $5,000 for their first season. Faith is alleging that is what she got paid at one point in time. I understand that she's saying, and then she expected to get a new contract and to be making more. And instead, she was given a. I didn't even know you could give someone a contract that says you are a volunteer.
Yeah, that doesn't sound
But
right.
I guess it. I don't know what it was. But if you think about, like, I mean, recent interviews that Peter Madrigal has done, he's. Basically said they said we don't have enough money so you can come on as a volunteer, right? So it's the issue is where is it racially motivated, which is part of what she's arguing, and where is it I remember even Rob Valletta or whatever his name was that was dating Sheena, he would give them arguments about it. He wanted his like regular day rate as an actor, and they were like, we're not paying you whatsoever. So I understand, you know, you feel like you would be moving up, the ladder, I guess, which does typically happen on Vanderpump Rules, but I just don't know how it works in the quote unquote friend of category of Vanderpump Rules, which doesn't really exist. Even Kristen Doty was demoted in season 8 from an episodic rate to a day rate.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know why, right? So, you know, it's not like it hasn't happened, because she is arguing that she actually says this wouldn't have happened to her white cast members, you know? So,
I think that the network actually needs to lean into being more transparent. I think that they've gotten so used to hiding, like, okay, we're going to pay this person and don't let this person know, and we're going to negotiate this. But if they were actually transparent, they could avoid issues like this, because mm-hmm. if Faith had seen that, like, okay, it's not just you who's not getting paid, this person isn't getting paid, this person, you know, they would have something to stand against. But because she's working blindly, and mm-hmm. all she sees is, you've pulled me back in, you've used me for a major storyline, and then sort of tossed me away, and I've gotten nothing. It's hard to reconcile, because historically, they have taken advantage of, you know,
right.
Black actors, Black reality stars in that way. And so it's hard to differentiate. So it would behoove them to, yeah, be transparent, avoid these sorts of things.
It is wild what's coming out now, just in general, of what was on camera. Just roll the tapes, Bravo. It's just every day, it's just like, this exists, right? Or does it? I wonder where this pile of trash is, where, you know, James is hitting Kristen, and like all of these things are happening, and it's in like some tucked away land somewhere. But it's wild to know every day that there is just a new cut piece of footage that I want to see it.
There's so much, I will say, off the record stuff that I've been told or shown that I could never talk about. And I'm like, I can't even believe this exists or is real. And I'm just like, whoa. Like, and that's why, like, I know these cases probably will never make it to court, because the discovery, you know, they say the first thing that goes out is, you know, do not destroy any, you know, footage.
But the amount of time it would take to wade through that kind of footage is wild, right?
I want now, that job though.
The one that I was actually saying that to some other content creators the other day. It's like, that is the job I would want. I would do that easily. The one comment you made on your live when you were reading this off, because typically you don't give your opinion, you just read it. You had your one opinion. It was when Faith mentions a hot mic in her home music studio inadvertently recorded a conversation between her and Jax. It says that the recording between them discussed their relationship, and Taylor informing Stowers of his intention to leave Cartwright. Another cast member, James Kennedy, illicitly accessed Stowers' phone and found the recording, which he sent to himself. Stowers had no idea Kennedy had accessed the recording until she heard chatter about its contents. So you had said, I don't believe that.
I don't believe that. I believe that,
hot,
you know,
mic.
Yeah. I mean, it just happens to be recording, but then how does it then end up on your phone for James Kennedy to then access it when you didn't know?
Right.
I think that, you know, she's very aware, or at least a lawyer has told her, that California is a two-party consent state,
right,
and you can't just be recording people. And so that's the only way that you could say, you know, you had this, because I've been in recording studios and I've never been accidentally, I've never been accidentally recorded to all the recording studios I've been through in years and years and years. And I definitely know that if I did have a recording studio, it doesn't go to my phone. So I just.
And I feel like I know this case with a fine tooth comb, but correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they have sex in the old lady's house, not her house?
They did. I mean, so, I thought they had sex in the old lady's house.
Right.
Or, I mean, because the old lady didn't come to her house, right? She was, you know.
Yeah. And then I guess the last thing that she's alleging is that then it turned into this whole sort of everyone, including the cast, production, is just trying to ruin her life, ruin her reputation. She spoke about the social media campaigns, or what she called campaigns. And we all know those are things that ended up getting Stassi and Kristen fired. I totally forgot about the fact that, you know, when Kristen and Stassi called the cops on Faith, that was actually captured on camera. And that is just something that they cut, which again was on the Bitch Bible. Stassi talks about that. She was like, oh yeah, they cut it. You know, I don't think they can talk about legal things. So it's funny, because that would have happened in 2016, yet they were fired in 2020. So I totally see Faith's point where she says, you know, thanks, but first you didn't ever come to me about it, which is what she's saying. You never, you know, apologized to me specifically, being the production company or those cast members. And, you know, 4 years later, right? Like it's,
Yeah.
I totally understand that. It's, you know, what are you doing now?
And people are, of course, are like in the comments, like her statute of limitations, it's over. She can't be doing this. And part of her argument is that she didn't do anything because she was constantly being told, by the production company that she had waived all of these rights. When she signed this contract, even though she wasn't being paid, she was waived all of these rights. Now, is it her fault that she didn't, get any legal guidance? Absolutely. But, I look at I always put myself in the position, right? I'm in a place in my career where if somebody were to offer me a reality show, I would heavily consider it. But I am not making enough money right now to hire a good entertainment lawyer. So I would be using anyone who is a lawyer close to me to be like, please read through this document. I luckily have lawyers who are in the entertainment field, but it's you end up in this position and it's like you can't put the cart before the horse, because like you said, the first season you're usually maybe getting $5,000, and that's how much you probably pay a good lawyer to review a contract from these big, so you kind of, part of, again, part of this reality reckoning is, what they should be asking for is like we should be provided, some sort of initial legal counsel if we can't afford it, or some sort of counseling session, make it easy access for us, obviously looking into medical care and health care and just making sure that our pay structure is on par. And if it becomes something that's a popular thing, that we're making some sort of some residuals. And I wish that it was focused on that. Unfortunately, that wouldn't make headlines. Nobody would be interested in a reality reckoning that's about pay wages and healthcare. So we got to be like, Andy Cohen is allegedly doing coke and, all of these things.
Which,
So
who cares?
also nobody cares. Also, I hope that, no, I don't say it, but like I expect my entertainers to be partiers.
They've done worse, and you know what? Let me know when he does, right? Like, until then, meh.
I want to get invited. Yeah.
Right. So at the end of the day, everybody wants to know, what does she want from this, right? Because the last couple lawsuits we saw, same with Rachel's, there isn't like a number amount stated. I did see a $10,000 amount that has something to do with legal fees, and then she definitely mentions different types of legal fees throughout, and then damages that would be totaled or determined at trial. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen this before, but it said trial by jury demanded. And does that literally mean demanded to the point where you will not settle?
No, it says that on all the documents. It's
Oh,
like,
okay.
it's something they want to demand a jury trial and like, but there will always be, so many settlement like
Okay.
negotiations. But this lawsuit, I think, is so at the bottom of the totem pole in like Bravo's whole, like this will get delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. I mean, there's people, I saw a woman the other day. It was like a lawsuit that she ended up winning like $28 million. And the lawsuit was from like 2014. It is 2024. And this was like a major thing, And so
Yeah.
these employment lawsuits, because, I go through the LA thing all the time. First of all, there's so many employment lawsuits in LA because it is a very employee-friendly state. And so people, so I don't think that, even getting to settlement is going to be something that's like anytime we're going to hear about in the near future if we get there. But I am curious with the bigger cases, like I would say, Caroline Manzo is a bigger case and Leah McSweeney is a bigger case. These bigger cases, I am curious because once they do settle, if they decide to settle, I do think that opens up, like a Pandora's box. I think like it opens them up and people are like, here we go. And so I wonder if they're going to do more pushback and just say, like, no, we're not going there. It's going to be so, I mean, so long. I mean, look, we're still dealing with Tom Girardi. He's not even going, he was supposed to go to trial in May. Now it's been pushed to August. Like,
That's true, but given that it has to do with race in some respect, do you think that they might treat it differently? Like, is this the one that they want to like hang their hat on and like let's push
I
back on
mean,
this one?
Nene's case had to do with race too, and that one ended up getting dismissed. And she, as far as I know, it was dismissed without prejudice. So she can refile, which to me signals there wasn't even a settlement.
Wow. Okay. I just thought that wouldn't be the one they would want to do it with, but Yeah, very interesting. I mean, these just keep coming. I don't think they'll end. I actually appreciate that Faith said in her lawsuit, because everybody always says, why now? Why now? And you mentioned the statute of limitations and what have you. But it's I do appreciate that she mentioned in there, I didn't know I had these rights. I didn't know these things were available to me, which, as you mentioned, right, just so many young people in moving to LA or young people in general just don't know what their rights are and don't have those legal opportunities available to them to sort of help them in those situations. So I think people need to be a little bit more forgiving with, it's not necessarily, I'm not saying she's not doing this out of thirst. I'm just saying it's not necessarily that. Just sometimes people don't know what their rights are or what is available to them until they do.
And unfortunately, in Hollywood, I'll call it, you sometimes just end up looking thirsty by default because the only way that can get it, you can get attention around something is by it being like something crazy. Like, look, the trash house of LA, the trash that had set the house that had 7 tons of trash around it for 10 years. It was like only because someone finally went viral on TikTok that the city was like, we're gonna clean this up. And it's like, you didn't care. You didn't care for 10 years. So it's like
Exactly.
sometimes you just need this level of like, okay, the valley's popular and I want to start this podcast and let's just go do this because like you gotta just sometimes you gotta hit your wagon to the star.
I know you gotta go because you're moving, but I have one question now that you mentioned the podcast. Like, what do you think of this podcast? It's $12.99. I
I
didn't
know.
pay for it.
Me neither. That's why I was like, I
Okay.
wanted to listen before we were
Yeah.
having your show, but I was like, I'm not paying $12.99, which to me also signals how there's a because I'll listen to I pay like $60 sometimes for a lawsuit
Yeah, this is
online.
that's a lot of money, right? I mean, like, I've never paid for a subscription, but that's quite a bit. But I hear that from the little clips, like she only talks about Vanderpump Rules in very little amounts. And my understanding is when you have an ongoing lawsuit, you're not going to be able to get into the nitty-gritty, same as Rachel's not either. So what is this podcast?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know, but it's like what I do know is like, I don't personally think she's doing herself any favors by doing movies with Randall Emmett because we all read the LA Times articles, whether they're true or not. It's just like someone that I don't personally wouldn't do business with. And it also when you are like mentioning his ex-wife, it doesn't the optics don't look great.
They don't look great. And I guess she dropped because she had about 6 months ago or so, she had started a GoFundMe to try to sue Stassi for bringing her name into her second book. And I guess that just sort of was dead in the water because she found out about the grassroots organization started by Bethany Frankel.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think there is validity to some of these allegations, and then, some of it is just like, and I think that's with a lot of like a lot of these lawsuits. It's like a lot of it, but when you get these lawyers, they have to kind of throw it all out there because so much of it does get stripped away, and they have to like be able to throw whatever they can to get the biggest settlement for themselves.
Yeah, we'll see. This is interesting, and I'm because we see Mark Garagos on each one of these, and I just want to be like, who's next? Who's next? Right? Like every week, it's like who's popping out of the box? Right? I'm very excited to see, and I hope there's more. Just for us, for fun.
Free content.
Like we have nothing else to
I
do.
know.
All right. Well, Kiki, I know you've got so much going on, so thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And where can people follow you? What do you got going
Yeah.
on? Let us
You can
know.
always follow me at The Talk of Shame on Instagram and TikTok. And obviously I have Pop Crime, which is on, Apple and Spotify by Betches. And every Monday on Radio Andy, Reality Checked.
That is so cool. Awesome, Kiki. Have a great one.
Thanks.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Okay, so let's get into Summer House from last week. So there wasn't a ton in the episode, so we don't have a ton to talk about, but we have Lindsay feeling like her and Carl are sort of at having growing pains, but they're both willing to work on it. And that you can totally appreciate about Carl and Lindsay. Like, as screwed up as they are, and as much as they're so not ready for marriage, these are definitely two people who are very committed to making it work. They may not be committed to doing the things that they need to do to make it work, but they're definitely committed to the work. And Paige is like, deep down, Lindsay knows she shouldn't marry him, but it's like a fairy tale. And it is. It's like such a cute story at the end of the day about how they were best friends and they didn't know they were right for each other until 7 years later. I mean, it is, right? But Paige is right. She's like, you know, you guys don't like each other. And that's the truth, right? Like, as much as they're fighting and as much as they're, sorry, fighting for each other, it's, you hate each other and you can't fight for something that is rotten. Where did I hear that? You can't fight for something that is rotten. I feel like I heard that in a movie and I feel like that's so applicable here. The guys tell Carl that, you know, if he makes too many concessions, it'll lead to resentment, which is obviously so true because again, like, he's so willing to do all this hard work and to do all these things, like go to anger management, apparently, because apparently Carl Radke has an anger problem. But, you know, he's going to end up resenting her at the end of the day if she makes him do all of these things that don't make him happy. Amanda ends up saying that Kyle annoys her and that she gets over it, but sometimes she stays in her feelings longer. And, like, yeah, we've definitely seen over the last few weeks, Amanda is just so fed up with Kyle. But obviously it has to do with other things and not the little things that she's bringing up. I mean, they do spend a lot of time together, and I think that has a big part to do with it. Not just, you know, the issues that they're having between the two of them, but, you know, they sort of, as Jax used to say, we work together, we play together. You know, maybe she needs to have, like, more... Isn't this going to come up later in the season? I feel like I remember in the trailer, someone correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't Sierra say something to Amanda like, do you feel like you have an identity outside of Kyle? Because I don't feel like you do. And I see that now, right? Maybe not an identity, but maybe what she needs is her own thing in some way outside of Kyle, whether it be work or, you know, a hobby or something else. Wes says that he and Sierra are moving slower than he's used to, but he didn't come to this house to be celibate. It is sort of a douchey thing to say, but he is such a sweetie among, like, all of the trash men on this network, so I'll sort of take it, I guess. And I guess the biggest thing that happens this episode is that Carl asks Kyle to be a flower boy in his wedding. And Kyle just flat out says, like, so not a groomsman. And Carl says, no, it'll be, like, Kyle, Luke, and Andrea. And if you're long-term Summer House watchers, you'll remember Luke and Andrea from previous seasons. So then Carl tells the camera that the issue is that he has a lot of friends. And he says, like, Lindsay didn't flat out say it in terms of, like, no, Kyle can't be a groomsman. But the way Kyle acted last year, Lindsay doesn't really want him to be a groomsman. So he's, you know, and even in the after show, he doesn't, like, flat out say it. But, you know, it's such an odd dynamic because even in the after show, everyone is like, how dare you do this to Kyle? Like, he officiated your wedding and you're going to make him a flower boy? Like, he's a 42-year-old man. And I agree. Like, it's super embarrassing to ask someone to do that. Also, they were in a weird place. And if you think about, you know, the things he did say about Lindsay last year, whether or not they're true, you know, that is the woman who Carl is going to marry and the woman who is in the wedding, right? So it's, ugh, I'm just glad that wedding didn't happen. He said that Kyle still ends up being, like, gracious, and he expresses how much he loves Carl and Lindsay, but you can see he's, like, very, very salty about it. Sierra ends up letting Wes sleep in her bed, but just sleeping. Carl ends up going suit shopping, and then we get an Andrea sighting. Guys, Andrea is such a handsome man, and he's so sweet, and it's just too bad that we don't get more Andrea sightings on Summer House. So when they're at the suit store, Kyle is venting to Andrea about how, like, he's been best friends with Carl for such a long time, and how he officiated how Carl officiated Kyle's wedding to Amanda, and he's always been by his side, but he says he's just sort of embracing the new normal, which shows that he's, like, butthurt, essentially, but he's accepting it, right? I mean, how can you not? You can't say, no, I refuse, I insist in being your best man. I mean, oh my god, can you imagine? Amanda says she always liked that Kyle was social, but she didn't think he'd still be like this 10 years later. And Paige says that Kyle is acting like Amanda is the one that, like, does this or that. She's the one that has all these issues, but he's the one that's partying till 4 a.m., which is so true. I mean, especially on the after show, he portrays her as so lazy. And he says something like on the after show, like, if they end up getting a house together, he feels like it'll all be on him, all the responsibility, all the work, which is just, again, another jab at her about being lazy. And it's just so disrespectful because this woman gets her stuff together. And it just reminds me of later on with Tom Sandoval, and we'll get into that. But like, who are these men to tell these women that they are too lazy to live? You are too lazy to have children. You are too lazy to own a home. It's just, it's wild to me. So Kyle ends up offering Carl to promote new drinks with Loverboy on a part-time basis. And he says he'll think about it. Carl tells the camera that Lindsay wouldn't be on board with it, and they're like in a good place right now, and he doesn't want to rock the boat. Obviously, we know now that Carl and Lindsay didn't get married, and Carl does work for Loverboy now, and he helps selling their line of non-alcoholic drinks, which is awesome. But if you think about it, it's funny that Carl took a year off of work to figure out what he wanted to do, and only to find himself back at Loverboy, right? So then the gang has a white dinner. It's like an Italy dinner, and Andrea is there. Kyle calls Jesse an idiot when he tries to get Jesse to shut up when Amanda's talking, and she looks horrified by him. And I don't know why, since he was defending her. It's just, she just hates her husband right now. They end up talking about a place outside of the city, where, like, it would be ideal for her to have, you know, for like a week or two, or for like a month at a time. And Amanda's saying how much she just really needs that change of scenery. And Kyle just sort of whispers, like, I love our apartment, though. And Amanda's like, yeah, but I don't want to be pregnant here. And Kyle says, like, he figured that they'd have the kid, and that's when they'd make the move. And Amanda just, like, glares at him, and she's like, you wouldn't be the one with the kid. So, again, they're just, like, in this very, very weird place. It's interesting because they are so different in age. I believe Amanda's, like, early 30s or 30, and Kyle's 42. And she's the one who wants to nest and have the home and have the kids. And he's the one who still wants the 4 a.m. lifestyle and the hustle bustle of the city. And, you know, I see what she's saying, where she's, you know, she's not even saying, like, okay, let's get rid of the city altogether. I think where there's room here is that there is compromise, right? She's saying, I just want a place that's outside of the city for a little bit of time. And he's saying, well, I thought we wouldn't have to do that until, you know, we actually had the kid. But, you know, that's not really compromise, Kyle. Like, I feel like she's doing a good job of being like, let's have a bit of both until we're ready for that sort of period of time, right? Ugh, it's just, I don't know. They were on Watch What Happens Live recently, Amanda was, and they seem to be doing okay. But the after show, again, I just mentioned that it just gave a different vibe of where he equates her laziness, I guess, with work or whatever else he's referring to in regards to her laziness. But guys, remember, they have those two dogs that she is very, very connected with, and those are her babies. And, you know, dogs require quite a bit of work, quite a bit of walks, cleaning up, taking them to the vet, lots of things. And Amanda is on top of it. So again, it's very insulting every time he says that she's like too lazy to have a child or too lazy to have a home. But anyways, I digress. In terms of Rachel Goes Rogue, it's super quick because she just did a very quick episode. So I'm just going to give you a couple sentences synopsis. But it was just called I Made a Mistake. And she was just talking about how she had posted herself at the iHeartRadio Awards as the best dressed, and she had posted how Katie and Dana were the worst dressed. It was a like screen recording of a, I don't even know what publication, like Daily Mail or something like that, or Life and Style, that had put Rachel in best dressed and Katie and Dana in worst dressed. And so she had posted it, and then she had encouraged Joe to repost it. And so she's saying that she shouldn't have done that. She said that she texted Katie to apologize. And both ladies, Katie and Dana, basically responded with, I'm going back to bed. So that's pretty much it for that. Let's get into Vanderpump Rules.
He's a f***ing battered wife. Look at him.
Okay, so we're still at beach day, and Brock is talking about how poor Tom Sandoval has been castrated. And Ariana's like, I disagree, because he's literally, like, still throwing jabs at her. And he is. And, like, Brock, given what this man did with his penis to get himself in the situation that we're in, I don't think he's been castrated, okay? And, like, I agree with Ariana here. he does keep making these snide comments about her. And Ariana's like, I'm allowed to feel a certain type of way about this man because of what he did to me, and I never did anything to him. And she keeps driving this point home, and I think that that's what is, like, important. Like, he acted like he was so concerned about hurting Ariana and doing this to Ariana, but he has not apologized to her. He's making comments behind her back. And, like, she is not the one who cheated. So, like, she was just literally just sitting back living her life when all of this happened to her. And, like, she also says to the camera, like, this is how he talks about her in front of people. Then, like, why aren't her friends, like, standing up for her? And I totally feel for her in that sense, right? So then the Toms go off to get a drink somewhere else, and Sandoval, like, doubles down to the camera about, like, how he was the one making sure that the house was always stocked with the pens and the toilet paper and batteries, and I was just like, is he serious? Is he serious? Is he bringing this up again? Like, is that a joke? And the producer has to ask him as well. The producer's like, why are you bringing that up again when you got roasted on the internet the first time? And he just says, Ariana's in for a rude awakening when she gets her own place. Okay, so, guys, I want you to know this about me. Currently today, Thursday, I do not have batteries in this moment, but I want you guys to know that it's okay, because if I need them, there is a store that's open across the street 24 hours where I can get those batteries, or I can order them online on Uber Eats. So I just want you guys to know I'm okay. I'm okay. If you guys are really worried, please, you know, reach out. But I am okay. I think Ariana will be okay as well. And, you know, I know this is super complicated and not everyone else can live without, you know, someone in their home who can buy them these sorts of toiletries. So I understand. So if you guys have a chance, please check out my Instagram after this. I've provided a screenshot detailed breakdown of how to buy batteries from Walmart on Uber Eats. It's super detailed. Again, if you need help, please reach out. I hate Tom Sandoval. Okay, moving on. Like, again, wild that he did that. So then Sheena decides that she wants to try to set up Schwartz with Tori. So as you'll recall, Tori is the pink-haired girl. She was the one who was going to be a nanny for Summer Moon. And we're bringing her into this season as a pawn for a produced setup between Schwartz and her, and Katie and her, to have this weird sort of battle between the exes of, you know, this divorced couple who's gonna date this girl. It's weird. I always thought it was, but all right, let's watch. So first Sheena tries to set up Schwartz with Tori, but then Katie was interested in her too. So everyone else packs up from the beach, and they go to have food and drinks at the same place that the Toms are at, but, like, away from them. And then we see Sandoval going up to some girls and, like, starting to hit on them. And then Tori comes over to say hi, and she's talking to Schwartz. And, like, she is so cute. Like, she has such a bubbly personality. I really like her. I wonder if she'll end up having more of a role on this show, just because, like, she's such a fun fit for the group, I feel like. So then Schwartz offers to buy her a drink, and she's like, you know what I like? And he says, tequila. And then he looks, and then she kind of gives him this weird look. He's like, oh, no, wait, it's champagne. I was thinking of a different girl. That's what Schwartz says. I was thinking of a different girl. So Schwartz says that he always thought Tori was cute, and at Hotel Ziggy, she confessed to him that she thought that he was fly, which is a weird thing to hear out of the mouth of a 41-year-old man, but here we go. And then Katie walks over and joins them, and Schwartz calls Katie a cock blocker. And he's like, I don't know if she's into Tori or if she just wants to compete with me to, like, prove that she's better. And Katie is like, you know, if Tom doesn't like me taking girls from him, then he should just try harder. So Katie starts dragging him in front of Tori. And so he actually, you know, in typical Schwartz fashion, he just ends up getting up and he goes over to the table of where Sandoval is at, where he's hitting on other girls, which to me means Katie won. And yeah. Seemed pretty easy to me. So then we're back to the rest of the group where Lala is and Ariana, and they're eating oysters. And Lala says to Ariana that, you know, she can't control Tom and what he does, but does she have unresolved feelings? And Ariana's like nodding, and she's like, you know, she understands that the amount of anger that she has is unhealthy, but she did nothing to him. Again, like, she's driving that home. And Lala's like, did he make you feel like he just sort of threw you away like you were nothing? And Ariana's like, yeah. And then we see, like, Lala getting emotional for the first time on Ariana's behalf, and she seems to understand where Ariana's coming from because she's like dabbing at the corner of her eyes, because I feel like she gets that deep down. Like, to have someone you were with for so long not even show an ounce of emotion is so hurtful. Like, I can't even imagine. And Sheena's like, you just need to get out of the house for your happiness. Like, who cares about the materialistic items? And Ariana finally breaks down and she's like, you're right. And this is sort of the first time we've seen this emotion from Ariana that isn't anger. And I feel like this is what we need to see more of, right? This is sort of what Terry Maloney was talking about in her episode last week. She said, this is what we're missing. You know, Ariana must be hurt, devastated, confused, navigating through all those feelings. But all we're seeing is poor Sandoval, right? Then we have Katie telling the camera that she's always had an attraction to women, but she didn't act on it, obviously, because she was with Schwartz for such a long time. Tori's so cute, and she asks Katie to kiss her, and the kiss, like, honestly looked like pure happiness between the two of them. I just absolutely loving it. Despite the fact that, obviously, I think this is a fake setup thing, I just would totally stan this pairing between Katie and Tori. Or Tori and anybody. I stan a pairing between Tori and Vanderpump Rules. I love Tori on Vanderpump Rules. And then we have this very bizarre scene of Lala and Joe going to get hot dogs together. You heard. Super weird. And so Lala says that she could see that Joe wasn't okay at Hotel Ziggy, so she wanted to check on her. And Joe tells the camera that, you know, she wants to be welcomed into the group, and if she wants to be in Schwartz's life forever, Lala is the ticket to that. Okay, so there's so much wrong with this sentence. Be in Schwartz's life forever? Like, his what, right? His friend? And, like, also, I don't think Lala will be in Schwartz's life forever. Like, they only hang out during filming. They're, like, not close. Also, since when is Lala the key to Schwartz's heart? This whole scene is super produced and weird. So then Lala flat out asks Joe if she knew about Tom and Raquel. And she says no. She said she thought that Tom and Ariana were broken up and that it's crazy for anyone to think that she would have asked Sandoval, like, oh, how was your relationship going? Okay, but you were at their house over Thanksgiving. You know, the house that they shared together as a couple. So why would you think that they were broken up? So sorry, Joe. I feel like that's a lie. I do not feel for her on this one. I'm not here. So, you know, and again, back to Joe in the general sense, like, I am not for bullying Joe. I have no, like, issue with Joe. Would Joe be the kind of person I would hang out with, you know, on a Friday night or in any general sense? No, I don't see us having much in common, but, you know, I don't think Joe deserves any sort of bullying. I didn't really understand why she was on this show until this episode because, you know, obviously Sandoval needs people to film with, which is why Billy is here and Kyle Chan and all these other randoms, but, like, why is Joe here? And then we start to see a little bit more of that. But in terms of, you know, the Raquel of it all and Tom and Ariana, I mean, I think it's completely reasonable that Katie and Ariana specifically would not want to be friends with Joe. Again, not bullying her, but I don't think it's realistic for Joe to ever think that her entrance into the group will ever involve her being friends with Katie or with Ariana, because she did do those two both dirty, right? It is what it is. With the rest of them, it's a different story, but you can't expect that, and it doesn't make Katie or Ariana bullies for not wanting to be friends with you. Okay, so then we have a scene of James, Allie, Ariana, and Katie playing golf. James asks Katie how it came to be that she kissed Tori, and was it because Tom was right there? And James, like, is asking the camera, like, why is everyone acting like this is completely normal? And, like, yeah, I agree, because if this were last year, people would be dead. And, like, how incestuous, but also this whole group has always been so incestuous. Allie asks Ariana how the house stuff is going. And Ariana said that her lawyer sent a counter, and they're prepared to have the house sold. And she said that she wants, you know, for herself, a house that is, like, treehouse vibes. She says it'll be exciting to have something that's hers and something that no one can take from her. And that's such an interesting sentence because I'm actually sort of surprised that Lala, even though she's not there, Lala in general doesn't sympathize with Ariana more, because this is exactly how Lala feels about having her second baby. That being said, we go into a scene of Lala and Sheena going to the sperm bank, and Lala tells the camera that she wants to carry her own baby, but she knows that she wants to have a situation where she doesn't have to share and that the baby is all hers, right? Again, the same way that Ariana feels about her house. Lala gets emotional talking about her family. She said that she pictured her life like how she grew up, and that's just not what's happening, and she feels like she failed her child, but it also wasn't because of her, and so she can't risk that again. Lala tells Sheena that she doesn't feel bad for Ariana because she's choosing to stay in the house. Sheena says that she thinks that part of it is Ariana's pride and part is being like, oh, I can't move into an apartment. And Lala said that she would, you know, have more pride just living in a box. Sheena says that, you know, one day she hopes that this will all be over and it'll all make sense why it took so long, and Lala says that she hopes so too. So just a little bit of news, side note for everyone. Since then, Lala has done her gender reveal and she is having a girl, so congratulations to Lala. But I don't know, was that a bit of shade when Sheena said, like, I think it's part of Ariana's pride to be like, oh, I can't move into an apartment. Like, the way she said it was very, like, it would be beneath Ariana, or Ariana would act like it would be beneath her to move into an apartment, which is obviously never the vibe that I would have gotten from someone like Ariana. Her explanations for not wanting to move into an apartment are the cause, because apartments cost a lot right now. There was also the fact that she didn't want to move her two animals, one being a 50-pound dog and the other one who is a rescue and very old and, you know, doesn't handle moving well. So, you know, I don't know if anyone else took it that way, but to me it seemed like shade. And again, I feel like when Ariana sees these, and as she is seeing more and more of these, it is going to start to affect their friendship. So then we have Schwartz going to get his hair done. He, and as you guys know, Joe is a hairstylist, so he goes to get it done at her place, or her, like, salon, whatever you call it. He tells Joe that he had gone on a date with Tori the night before, and Joe is like, oh, why are the girls, like, letting you go on a date with her if she's in the friend group? And Schwartz is like, oh, all of that's out the window. And Joe's like, yeah, Max is way more in the friend group than me, but, like, I'm getting all the hate. But, like, Joe, again, like, it's the timing. Like, you moved in with Schwartz and started sleeping with him a few months after he and Katie separated. It's been years now, so no one would care if she dated Schwartz now. It's a different story. But anyways, Schwartz gets his hair bleached and it looks bad. Katie and Tori go on a painting date and it's so cute watching Katie flirt and be happy. And I feel like we've just never seen that side of her. Like, we've never known dating Katie, right? We got a little bit of it last year, but not really. Tom tells Joe that he's going to go to a singles mixer with Sandoval, and she invites herself. So at the mixer, it's Schwartz and Joe, and they meet up with Sandoval, Kyle Chan, and Sandoval's new assistant, Craig, at the singles event. And Joe, the entire time, is, like, running her hands through Schwartz's hair. Like, they looked very much in a relationship, and Sandoval's telling the camera that Schwartz and Joe are, like, on two different pages, which is so obvious. Then we have the girls going out for drinks and everybody looks so fire. And honestly, I just wish this was the whole show. I could just watch these four women for the rest of my life. Lala mentions going to get a hot dog with Joe and Katie's like, wait, you're just telling me now? And Lala's like, yeah, I'm just telling you now. And like very flatly like that. And Katie's like, you have no relationship with this girl. She's nothing to you and I'm something to you. And Lala tells the camera that Joe is harmless. And she says Schwartz gave Joe her name to reach out because she's soft right now. And this is something Lala has continued to say in the media about herself being soft. I don't think she knows what that means. Especially by the way that she's been acting online lately, the way she's been acting on this season. What I am seeing is the scariest, most aggressive person ever. Someone who is acting soft, I guess what she is equating as soft is just being open to people or talking to people that she wouldn't be open to being kind or speaking to before. But you're not being soft, you're being very aggressive with all the people around you in terms of the way that you are speaking right now and the way that you are moving. So they're back at the singles event. Schwartz is flirting with this girl who's asking for his hat, which is like, ugh, such like a high school, like, pick-me-girl thing to do. But he does it, and it's right in front of Joe. And then Schwartz ends up, like, kissing this girl, and Joe sees it. So she's like, oh, I gotta go. And, like, she tells the camera that she thought, like, they were there to support Sandoval. But when they got there, Schwartz was, like, interested in other women. Schwartz tells the camera that maybe it's not realistic for him to be so close with Joe and still date, and maybe she's in deeper than he is. Joe tells the camera that they are still hooking up, they said I love you to each other, and it bothers her that he doesn't want to share this relationship with his friends, and she's tired of feeling like a secret. So, wow, I mean, you know, we've all been in this situation, obviously, and, like, I really do feel for Joe here, especially when he is so clearly giving her mixed signals, and the way he's telling it to the camera, the way he's been telling it to the friend group thus far, it's, you know, it's very, like, wishy-washy, it's very Schwartz, it's very up in the air, it's very, like, non-committal. But then you look at the things he's actually telling her, and, like, of course she developed feelings for him. They said, I love you to each other. Like, you know, so for him to go to a singles event and make out with another girl in front of her, of course that's going to hurt her feelings. So then we have this random group event doing, like, paintball or something with Sandoval. And Lala, Allie, and Sheena sit down to talk, and they discuss the girls' night from the night before. And Lala said that Katie got really upset and said that she wants loyalty and consistency. And Lala says that that's rich coming from the girl who just fucked her ex's best friend. Okay, who was Katie not loyal to here? Her ex-husband? Because she doesn't owe him anything. So that argument literally makes no sense. And then Lala said that Katie is unhappy and that she knows that she's been unhappy for a long time. And the others don't disagree, but this seems like new information because I thought Katie was happy and is living her best life. And, like, on the show, she's not part of any drama, so I don't know what Lala means that Katie is unhappy. Like, in what respect? I don't really know. So we have a scene of Joe and Schwartz at his apartment, and they do a flash over to his fridge, and there's literally pics of Joe on his fridge. So again, like, no wonder this girl is confused. So Schwartz asks her if, like, he's been sending her mixed signals because he knows that they have so much fun together and they have chemistry, but he says he doesn't want to be in a relationship at all and he wants to date other people. Okay, so good on him here for being straightforward, but, like, based on where, like, we can see Joe is mentally, like, he should have said this to her a long time ago. Like, telling her he loves her, sleeping with her, having pics of her on his fridge, like, saying we could have been happy in another timeline. I mean, these are all things that are giving her hope, and I feel so bad for her because, like, again, we've all been there, right? Joe says, like, can you imagine how I feel after being around you for a year and a half? And, like, yeah, I've been there, right? Like, I've been there where you're really hoping that a guy will change his mind and will say, okay, now I am ready for that relationship. And when I am ready for that relationship, you're the one I'm going to be in that relationship with. But it never happens that way. But you wait and you wait and you wait. And in the meantime, you fall in love. And now it's too late when he's told you that he's 100% not going to date you and he's not interested because you have already fallen head over heels, right? And it's just so painful at that point. So, you know, I think so, so many people have a story like this, and I feel like so many people can relate to Joe. So then Schwartz starts, you know, trying to make excuses, and Joe says, shut the fuck up. And, like, good on you, Joe. Like, put your foot down with this golden retriever of a man. And then she says, are you embarrassed by me? And he says, oh God, no, Joseph. And I don't even know if I like when he calls her Joseph, but whatever. And then he asks, like, you know, it's okay that they keep hanging out because he loves it. And she's like, no. And it seems like he finally gets it. And Joe says, like, because of all of that, like, I need to take some time because I think deep down I do have feelings for you. And I'm so impressed that she actually just comes out and says this, especially after he basically dumps her. So it's, like, so embarrassing to admit to someone who you know isn't going to say it back. So I'm impressed, like, by the balls on Miss Joseph. Good on her. This was, like, really hard to watch, like, especially when she teared up because we all feel for her in this moment. And especially at the very, very end there where she's like, oh, I want to call my dad. I really feel for you, Joseph. I really do. All right, so that's the end of Vanderpump Rules.
And my that's God, what you
why is it about
on?
The damn pasta? Get over the damn pasta, read between the f***ing lines. It ain't about the pasta. It's not about the pasta. It's not about the pasta.
Okay, let's get into the VPR after show. So it starts with Ariana saying that she put a lot together into her counter offer for the purchase of the house. She said that she included all of the furniture that was purchased after buying the house. Tom said that she doesn't even water her own plants. And then it goes back to Ariana, who says that it turns out that she purchased the majority of the stuff in the house. Then Tom says, well, they both bought things, and he doesn't see the point in donating furniture if one of them is going to keep the house, which apparently is what Ariana's offer said, that she would keep what she wanted and donate the rest. Tom starts going on about, like, this mirror that Ariana wanted, but he wants it. And then he just starts, like, routing off, like, what he's paid for, and I'm, like, so over this house argument. Like, I can't anymore. Ariana said that she thinks that Tom thought she would just, like, pack a backpack and go. Tom says that he knows they'll just figure it out one day without any kind of judgment. What the hell does that mean, without any kind of judgment? And Katie is like, he just needs a smash pad, bro, and... totally true. Like, Tom, get out of the house. Get out of the house. Then we have Lala saying that Katie was livid that she hung out with Joe. And Lala said that we all have the right to feel how we want to feel, the same way that she has the right not to care how you feel. Jesus, Lala, the shade already, right? And it's like, this was even a period of time when they were good. I mean, she was at Lala's baby shower just a couple of weeks before the reunion. And so obviously these confessionals and this after show was filmed prior to the reunion, but she is just coming for Katie, like, constantly. Then we have Lala saying that, you know, she just feels like she's been a dog in everyone's fight and it's never been reciprocated. And I feel like that's not true, because, like, if you go back to season 5, Ariana invited Lala to her Sonoma NASCAR birthday, which Lala ended up bailing on. There was also this big fight at, like, one of the pool parties they had, where Stassi's going off at Sheena for being nice to Lala, and Ariana gets involved and said, like, she's just someone that we work with at Sir, just, like, leave it alone. There was also the OK magazine party where James and Lala came up to the group and the whole summer bodies thing, and Ariana basically defended them there too, saying that they were, you know, that James and Lala were her friends. There was even Sandoval saying, like, about the whole Range Rover thing, because people were always coming at Lala about the Range Rover. There was, like, even that time where Sandoval said to Jax, like, you know, like, Range Rover gives away, like, cars every year, and Jax is like, I don't think she was the recipient of the car. But, you know, he tries to even defend her in that sense, so I don't agree, you know? Like, she had the backing of James, or sorry, of Tom and Ariana back then, especially Ariana, right? Like, the person you're being so terrible to right now. And then she says, like, she's not, like, going out to invite Joe to family dinner. She was just trying to be kind. And Katie's saying that it's great that Lala is embracing being soft, but she's not doing that with Katie or Ariana, which is totally what I've been saying, right? Like, why are you being so hard with the people who are your actual friends and soft with the people who aren't, like Joe and Sandoval? Brittany says that the softer side of Lala is the only side that she's ever seen of her, and Brittany asks if Katie has ever come to her defense on anything, and Lala said that she doesn't feel like the cast has ever done that for her, so why is she writing so hard for them if they wouldn't do the same for her? Again, disagree, and I gave my points as to why. Schwartz calls Katie a cockblocker. Katie says that she was interested in Tori before she knew that Tom was. Schwartz says that he doesn't know anything about Katie's dating life now, but it wouldn't bother him to hear about it, which is such a Schwartz thing to say. Schwartz said that Joe came to his life when he sort of needed someone. James says that he thought that Schwartz was leading Joe on. Brock said that, you know, just Schwartz loves confusion, and the situation was confusing. Sheena said that Adam would do the same sort of thing to her, like he brought her home to meet his family, and I remember that as well. Like, if there was someone who I was seeing who, you know, he was not my boyfriend, yet he was holding hands with me and brought me to meet his mom, you know, so doing all of those confusing things, and, you know, guys look at us like we're crazy, and it's like, how did you not understand? I said we weren't together, and it's because you're doing all of these weird mixed signals things, and like I said, I feel like we all have a story just like Joe does. Tom said, Schwartz, said that he felt like he was always keeping a clear line of communication, but by the time the cameras were up, it just wasn't the same and things had fizzled out. The Toms are asked about singles night. Sandoval said that he knew that Joe still had feelings for Schwartz and she was running her fingers through his hair and marking him. marking him. I don't know what she means. Or sorry, what he means there by like saying that Joe is marking Schwartz. Like a cat or a dog. I don't know. Schwartz said that he had no expectations from singles night and Joe had invited herself. And they had talked about how they had both moved on and she had talked about going on dates with other guys. So he thought they were on the same page by that time. Schwartz said that as of today, their relationship is very much watered down and they're both seeing other people and they're cool. And then everyone basically gives their opinion on Schwartz's bleach blonde hair, which, you know, I really didn't follow or care much about. And that is the end of the after show.
This is why my show is successful. This is
actually not your show. It's actually my show.
Okay, let's get into the valley. So we are back at the dinner party from hell, which is what I'm calling this because, you know, the bulk of this few episodes, I guess, or probably even the season, center around this dinner party. So Michelle stands up and she starts like yelling at Kristen about how she's like Mexican and Persian, and to have the word racist associated with her name is like detrimental to her. And Kristen is just like looking at Zach and she's like, it's because of him. And Zach looks horrified. And then we have like Jesse telling Kristen that she needs to grow up because she keeps doing the same things over and over again, expecting different results. Then Jasmine's telling the camera that, like, Kristen can just fix this by saying that she got the information wrong, but she won't. And maybe I should just sort of remind people of what's going on. So in the last episode or the last couple of episodes, we have this big fight that breaks out. And last episode, I did more of, like, a line-by-line breakdown because the fight is about a rumor, and the rumor is super, super confusing. So I'm just going to try to explain it again before we get too much into the episode. So the rumor is that Michelle said that don't say gay laws protect children. And then Janet was like, no, they don't. And then told Jasmine this. And then told Jasmine that this could be a good teachable moment for Michelle. And then somehow this got to Zach. And somehow Michelle thinking that don't say gay laws protect children makes her a Republican, which insinuates that she could also be homophobic and racist. So I hope that everyone follows that. Now, in terms of whether the words Republican was ever said, Zach has confirmed that he did use that word. In terms of whether the words racism or homophobic were ever used, everyone so far has said no. We do have flashbacks, you know, to Zach in last episode where they're trying to prove that he has admitted to something. But again, he has only admitted to saying certain things and not what I have just said. No one at this point, at the top of episode 4, has admitted to saying the words racist or homophobic. Okay, so Kristen keeps apologizing for repeating it. But people are upset that she said it at all, because in their eyes, she made it up like it was never said. So then Luke stands up and he's like, he heard the word racist on the phone from Zach. And then Jax is telling the camera that he actually thinks that Janet is a silent killer because she likes to drop something and sit back and watch them tear it down. And then he said that she is just like him. Like, what does that mean? And I'm so curious her reaction after the fact to seeing his confessional saying that he thinks that she is just like him. I do not think she would consider herself like Jax. Like, she is my favorite by far. But there was like this another moment a little bit later on where we see her eavesdropping on a conversation that Kristen's having, and she looks so mischievous. And I have to remind myself, like, these newbies, we may not know them, but they are friends with Jax, Kristen, Sheena, Lala for a reason, right? Like, they are going to be like them. So, you know, it actually is odd to see a character, for example, like Jason, who's a lawyer, right? He doesn't really fit into the same sort of jobs that the rest of the group have, or, you know, that's why I'm curious to get to know a little bit more about him and his background. But yeah, I mean, all of these people are friends with our Vanderpumpers for a reason, right? So I'm curious to get to know more about them. Then Michelle is saying, like, for Kristen to sit down and saying that no one said that. Kristen is like, so you want me to say I made it up? And Michelle's like, yes. And do you see what Kristen did here? Like, she doubles down while turning it around on Michelle and gaslighting her. Like, it's very manipulative, but super brilliant at the same time. So Kristen sits down with Zach and she's like, I am so beyond disappointed in you. And Zach is like, you are trying to take no responsibility. He's like, I admitted I said things to you on camera. But he's like, you just steamrolled me. And Zach is like, Janet is the instigator of all of it. And she's controlling the entire narrative and the situation. And again, she is? Like, how? Because, like, even if she said what she says she said, so telling Jasmine that Michelle thought the don't say gay laws protect kids could be a teachable moment to Jasmine, nothing else was said by her. So she's not the instigator in my book. And I mean, at this point in time, Zach and Kristen are best friends and Janet is on the outs with both of them. But let me know if you disagree. So, and you know, as we sort of get to know these people and we go forward, obviously we can change our opinions about all of them. So Janet ends up saying that she needs some time to digest and she needs a break from Kristen. We have a scene of Jax and Brittany having a speech therapist come over because Cruz was saying a few words and then he started regressing and isn't really saying anything now. They talk about how busy they've been and how they really haven't had time for a date night because of the bar and because of Cruz. And that's why I was surprised when they decided to open a bar. Like, after they saw what it did to the Toms, like, obviously a lot of people lose their relationships because of these businesses, so I was just like surprised that he made that decision. Even though it's not just that, I mean, Brittany has done a lot of media and we'll get to that. Brittany tells the camera that they have only had sex twice in the last year, and I was so surprised to hear that because of, like, Jax is practically like a sex addict before, like when he was on the show, and they've really only been married for a few years, so honestly I just find this so sad. So Jax ends up saying that he compares his kid to other kids and he knows that he shouldn't do that. And Brittany said that she just doesn't want Cruz to struggle with anything. So a lot of people had previously speculated that something was going on with Cruz and that, you know, maybe this is something that Jax and Brittany were hiding. I just want to remind people that we're talking about a kid here. Obviously, we hope for the best for Cruz and all the great therapies that he's getting, and we just hope for the best. There's no reason to say anything negative about this situation. The only thing negative to say would be if Jax is not being open to trying different things for Cruz, right? Which is something a lot of people online were predicting as possibly one of the reasons for Jax and Brittany's separation, that he's being hard-headed and old-school thinking and, you know, not really acknowledging some of the things that Cruz is going through. But so far from what we've seen of this scene, he's open to the speech therapy, but again, you know, we'll see where it goes. Then we have a scene of Jesse and Michelle, and she says that she got a text from Kristen saying that her secrets are safe with her. And she's like, I have no idea what secrets she's talking about. And this is bringing her and Jesse, like, together, but sort of in a different way, and I get it. Like, there's nothing that brings people closer together more than their hatred of another person. But also, doesn't that sort of sound like a threat? Like, to say, like, don't worry, like, I'm gonna keep all your secrets? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too conspiracy theory today, but I feel like that sounded like a threat. Then we have a scene of Janet and Jason at their house cooking, and Janet said, did you notice how, like, three times at dinner, Kristen has saying that she protected Michelle? And Janet's like, if you were deposing someone, she says to Jason, what would you ask? And he's like, protected how? Like, protection from who? And Janet tells the camera that it seems like Kristen is insinuating that she has something on Michelle and it feels icky to her. Which is, yeah, just like I said. Janet says that she worked as a personal assistant for 6 years, and she became aware of the Be The Match organization, which ended up saving her friend Jared Lishcombe's life. So they're all going to a gala for it. Then we have a scene of Kristen and Luke at home. Kristen says that Janet is being a bitch, and people are just being sympathetic towards her because she's pregnant. Then we have a scene of the boys taking the kids to this county fair. Jesse says that he and Michelle are basically so far gone that complimenting her now seems fake, which again is sad, but I sort of feel like I keep saying this. It's like sort of hard to relate to this couple that we just didn't really get a chance to know that well. And like, I don't know if you guys ever used to watch MTV stuff before, but you know what would have been like a really good idea prior to this show. They should have released like 1 hour, like Bravo should have released like 1 hour episodes like MTV did for Teen Mom, like Being Barbara. Like, I don't know if you guys remember that, but like it should have been like Being Janet, Being Jason, Being Jesse, Being Michelle. You get like a 1 hour episode on each of them just so you can get more introduced to them prior to the show starting. Anyways, just an idea, but too late now. And so the guys are just sort of all talking about their relationships and where they are. And Jax is saying that, like, the romantic part with him and Brittany is just gone and it's his fault. He says that she deserves to have someone love on her. And the desperate, sad look in his eyes, like, it really broke my heart. I don't know, guys. Like, it's just really upsetting, this whole separation between them. Then we have a scene of Luke and Kristen going to dinner. Luke tells the camera that he has his whole life set up in Colorado and there's, like, better people there. And Kristen tells him that California is important to her and she can't leave in the next few years. And Luke is like, okay, but why? And Kristen is like, because I've moved 3 times in the last year and it's just too much. Yeah, but also you just started a show here, Kristen, so there's that. Like, let's be real, there's that. But I actually had no idea that they wanted, or that they haven't really made their decision in terms of where they want to live, but they have made a decision in terms of having a kid. Like, I didn't realize at this point that they haven't made that sort of choice, because that's such a big deal, right? Like, if Kristen gets pregnant, you guys need to decide pretty quickly where you guys are going to settle, right? So then we have a scene at the Be the Match gala, and Jesse is wearing, like, this tux that looks like a cartoon villain. I can't even describe it. You just have to go look at some of the videos. I just can't. So then Zach decides to be the peacemaker, because again, we're only at episode 4 and this fight has been going on since episode, what, 1, 2? And we need to resolve this, right? Zach at least knows that. So he pulls Kristen, Michelle, and Jesse aside to talk. And so Kristen apologizes and she says, I'm apologizing for repeating what was said. And Michelle says, again, we are upset because you keep saying the word repeated and everyone is denying that comment. And Kristen looks around sort of dumbfounded as if someone had, like, indeed agreed out loud that they said racist and homophobic, which we still don't know if it was said and by whom. And she starts trying to, like, relitigate it. And Jesse, like, gets so frustrated and leaves the room and goes out to the hallway, like, in anger. Kristen then apologizes again and Michelle just says that she needs space. Michelle says that she believes that Kristen needs some help, and she tells the camera that she just doesn't believe anything that Kristen says. So Jesse asks Kristen if it's just worth continuing to do the same shit over and over. Zach looks completely terrified, and he's just sort of whispering, like, this is ending, because that's what he was really trying to do. So, like, he's kind of annoyed that Jesse is continuing to, you know, egg this on, because he's trying to end this. He's trying to facilitate the end of this. Jesse tells her not to be in the middle of everything and to be cool and they will be fine. So that's basically the end of the episode. And, you know, in terms of social media stuff, Michelle has been doing some Ask Me Anythings on Instagram. She was asked if she and Jesse will ever get back together. She said nope. She was asked if she and Kristen are friends. She said nope. So definitely it seems like this fight continued on and continued till now and really did affect her friendship with Kristen. We had Brittany on Not Skinny But Not Fat with Amanda Hirsch this week. She said that basically Jax has not done any of the things that she's asked him to do, like go to therapy. She even says that she would be open to dating, and she honestly just sounded so done with it, and it was sad. But she sounded, like, so strong and optimistic, you know, and when she was talking about their sex life, it was just, like, apparently it had just been so long gone at this point. It just really seems like they are absolutely not getting back together. Zach was also on The Vile Files, not so much being interviewed, but he did confirm and didn't give us really the information, but he did say we will get the answers on whether anyone said all the comments that were in the rumor, which I guess is what we're still wanting to know, right? All right, guys, well, that's the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen to this episode and any other episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can follow me on Instagram at I Take Bravo Very Seriously and at The Bravo Investigator. You can also follow me on TikTok at The Bravo Investigator. And if you like this podcast, please give it a 5-star review. And until next time, keep taking Bravo very seriously.